The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back into the Doctor's Lounge. I'm your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, and every week we've come to you with the information that doctors are discussing among themselves in doctors' lounges all across the country. We try to inform you regarding healthcare decisions that you need to make for yourself and your family so that you can make informed decisions and make the decisions that you need to make so that you can protect yourselves against what's out there. If I am sounding a little discombobulated this morning, I'll explain why. But our show is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is the only physician-led healthcare think tank in the country. Our foundation stands for the principles of the doctor-patient relationship and healthcare freedom for all Americans. Go to our website at www.d4pcfoundation.org. That's d4pcfoundation.org, and contribute to us so that we can continue to do the work that we do, bringing you the information that you need to hear about. And the reason why I'm a little bit discombobulated is because just 10 minutes ago I learned that the producer and owner-operator of this radio station, David Moxley, passed away, and the radio station will be shutting down, and consequently, this is going to be my last show on America's Web Radio. I have lots of mixed emotions about this right now, and I had a prepared show which I will be able to run through. But before I do, I'd like to honor David and thank him for the opportunity 10 years ago to come into the radio station and to share the thoughts that doctors have about healthcare and the issues of the day with those who were interested in what doctors are thinking. David was a true patriot, and he only cared about what would be best for our country, and he thought it was important to get the doctors' voices out in the airways so that people could get a better idea of what was going on in healthcare. Over the years, we've had a number of incredible guests on this show, and these are people from different walks of life, but primarily healthcare and politics. And we really, I think, made an impact, according to David, because we were able to say things that were being picked up by other outlets and lead the way. When we would begin talking about things, we learned shortly afterward that other outlets were discussing the same things, even though the issue or the idea was novel to what we were saying here on the radio show, which lent evidence to the fact that people were listening and picking up on the things that we were saying. I speak for myself and my co-host, Dr. Scott Barber, and our former host, Mike Karuchik, in expressing our gratitude to David Moxley and sending condolences to his family. And we hope that he is in a better place, and he's looking down on us, and he will continue to watch over us and be proud of what we're doing, trying to inform the public about the issues that the doctors find important to talk about among themselves. We will likely be pivoting, and I will see what we can do to make sure that those of you who download this podcast and or listen to us live will be able to find us when we transition and start doing our own podcast from Docs for Patient Care. That was something that was in the works, but now with the passing of David Moxley and the closing of America's Web Radio, that plan will get accelerated, because I think that there's still an important role for the things that we are saying. And this will be a project that Mike Karuchik and myself will undertake. So stay with us, stay tuned. We will try to see if there's a way that we can cross link America's Web Radio with our new podcast. So please don't forget about us or abandon us. Well, let me pivot. So what's interesting to me is that healthcare is such a low priority item in this year's presidential election. They just rattled off six or seven items, and healthcare ranked right at the bottom after the economy, after immigration, after crime and safety. And it's really quite startling, because it was always top of the list item for elections. And it's still very important, and people are affected by this daily. Everybody is affected, but the other issues are so pressing that healthcare has been pushed to the back of the list. Things are so screwed up right now that nobody can even think about healthcare, but they really need to, and they should. And doctors are still concerned about it. I just came back from a national meeting for pediatric urology, and now at my age, I'm a senior member of this organization, and there are many young doctors that I don't even know in this organization. And there was a time when I knew everybody in my organizations. But the point is that despite not having personal relationships with so many of these doctors, so many came up to speak to me about their concerns. My old friends know that I am the managing partner of the largest privately owned urology practice in the U.S., and in addition to that, I've been on the cutting edge of policy and politics, as you well know, for those of you who listen regularly to the show. And I suppose that in discussing healthcare matters with their younger associates, my name came up, and many people sought me out to, quote, pick my brain. And what they wanted to talk about were concerns about medical economics and medical practice. Most were employed by universities or hospitals and were facing economic challenges or experiencing moral injury because of limitations regarding what they could or could not do for their patients. Some doctors wanted to talk about their desire to quit medicine and discuss exit strategies. They liked practicing, but were burned out by hospital bureaucracy, by pressures to be productive, by overregulation by government, And they complained that practicing was just not fun anymore. Others wanted to discuss the dysfunction in the medical system and the unwillingness of either Democrats or Republicans to fix the problems. And I had to refute this with them and point out that the demise of the medical system came chiefly at the hands of Democrat administrations, but there is enough guilt to go around to everyone. We had discussions how this could be fixed if there was willingness to do so and to disengage from their special interests, which perpetuate this system. All that I spoke to agreed that Medicare for All was not the answer and were skeptical that this could ever be instituted. And I told them not to assume this because this is something that the progressives, the Marxists out there, very much are seeking to do. Many wanted to talk about how we are cogs in the machine, the ones that make the system work, and yet we are being controlled by business people and special interests. They are sucking all of the money from the system, enriching themselves and making healthcare more expensive for our patients. Hospital mergers, PBMs, that's pharmacy benefit management companies, for those of you who haven't been listening to me, malpractice lawyers, medical administrators, were all topics that people wanted to discuss. Finally, people wanted to tell me, they wanted me to tell them my take on the upcoming election. Almost everyone knows my conservative positions, but I'm also respected as a medical executive and a caring clinician. But they wanted to hear from me. Some were very concerned about Trump. They did not think he has a plan for healthcare and did not trust him. I had to remind these people about the good things that happened under his administration regarding healthcare choices for patients. Short-term health insurance plans, promoting direct primary care, supporting broader use of HSAs, all intended to give people more choices, to take away power from the government and put the decision-making in the hands of patients. I pointed out that Obamacare costs a family of four between $30,000 and $40,000 annually if they do not receive federal subsidies. They did not think Kamala Harris would have any impact on health care, and I had to remind them about the positions that she has taken until it became a liability to say these things again publicly, to outlaw private insurance, Medicare for All, health care for illegal aliens. The list goes on and on, but she is a chameleon. She will say whatever is necessary to make people believe that she should be the president. The conservative doctors who wanted to discuss politics were very nervous about Kamala Harris. They feared more government control and less autonomy, more regulations, and decreased income. I found all of this very interesting. The amount of concern about healthcare by doctors is almost as high now as it was when I remember it back when Obamacare was being discussed. The difference is that back then doctors were angry and they wanted to fight back. But after 16 years of being beaten down, the fight is gone and the sense of despair or grave concern is very palpable. Doctors are more willing to quit than to fight back or to put up with more garbage that gets in the way of delivering care to patients. The implications of this are startling. A Democratic president with a Democratic Congress will spark a rush to the exits by thousands of doctors. Mark my words. These are doctors who are late career doctors, but the ones with the greatest experience and knowledge. These are the doctors who would have been practicing well into their 70s, and they're, in many cases, the best in their fields. But instead, they're saying no mas. The doctors who are left are not as well trained. They may be smarter, but not better. They are more entitled and less available to patients, and there will be fewer of them, leaving patients with little choice and longer waits. As it currently stands, patients cannot get into a doctor for months in many cases. So this is what is at stake in less than 3 weeks. It's an election, not just about the economy or the border or foreign policy or even personalities. Healthcare is granular. It's as granular as politics gets. And it should not involve government, but unfortunately, we find ourselves in that position. And people should think about this when they're pulling the levers in the ballot box in a few weeks, or if they are voting absentee now, or voting early now. So these are things that people are not thinking about. They are reacting to personalities because they don't like Donald Trump. I have to tell you that you might not like him, but the alternative is going to be a major you know what show if Kamala gets elected. I want to read to you a very interesting essay that I received, which I think sums up everything, with early voting now starting and election day less than 3 weeks away. It's a little lengthy, but I think that it's important that I read this to everybody. The implications of the Harris-Walz agenda and the broader progressive movement within the Democratic Party are profound and concerning. One-party dominance could lead to an erosion of democratic checks and balances, potentially resulting in diminished individual freedoms, increased censorship of dissenting voices, a bloated welfare state fostering dependency, and gradual transformation into an authoritarian state with centralized control. This trajectory aligns disturbingly well with Friedrich Hayek's warnings in The Road to Serfdom. The Democrat Party's current agenda, with its emphasis on government solutions and centralized control, seems to be accelerating this journey down the road to serfdom that Hayek so preciously described. By pursuing these policies, the Harris-Walz administration and the Democratic Party are not merely seeking electoral advantage, but potentially reshaping American democracy and individual liberty. The stakes of this ideological battle extend far beyond partisan politics, touching on the core principles that have defined American freedom and prosperity for generations. If Harris and the Democrats seize control of all levers of power, their reckless deficit spending will spiral out of control, a necessary evil to maintain their grip on the electorate. This fiscal irresponsibility will inevitably lead the nation into a financial crisis, creating the perfect opportunity for further power consolidation. In such a scenario, the Harris-Walz regime would likely declare a state of emergency, granting themselves unprecedented authority to borrow and spend vast sums under the guise of aiding those in need. The critical juncture could mark the demise of America's constitutional republic as our free market system devolves into a failed authoritarian welfare state where individual liberties are sacrificed for government dependency and control. As voters approach the 2024 election, they must carefully consider the long-term consequences of these proposed changes and their impact on the nation's future. The choice is not merely between political parties, but between preserving the foundational principles of American democracy and embarking on a path that could lead to its irreversible decline. This is me talking. Now, I find it very, very rich that these people will claim that Trump is the danger to democracy. The Democrats, are masters at projection, ascribing characteristics to their adversaries that they themselves embrace and conduct themselves with. And the media, the state run propaganda arm of the Democratic Party, is complicit in allowing this to happen. This is a very long essay, and I'm going to read a few parts of it. A threat to American values, Kamala Harris's political challenges are not superficial issues of negative press coverage or communication gaffes. The fundamental problem lies in her unwavering support for the Biden administration's unpopular and destructive policies, stubbornly maintained despite overwhelming public rejection. With only 28% of Americans believing the country is on the right track, Harris, her progressive allies, and their enablers in the mainstream media demonstrate not just a disconnect, but a willful disregard for the concerns and well-beings of average citizens. This is dangerous and threatens a dangerous detachment from reality that threatens the foundation of representative democracy and the American way of life. Harris's frequent policy reversals raise alarming questions about the consistency and reliability of her positions. These erratic shifts prompt legitimate concerns about further reversals should she win in November. Given her troubling history, there is a real worry that once in office, she may revert to her original radical progressive stances, particularly those centered on the destructive principles of equity and equality of outcomes. This pattern of ideologic inconsistency suggests a disturbing prioritization of political expediency over principled leadership, revealing a candidate's willingness to say anything to gain power regardless of the consequences for the American people. Me again talking. Those of you who were able to tune in to the Harris interview on Fox saw her unwillingness to answer any questions, and she had either memorized lines or she took the time to change every single question into a "what about Trump?" and pointing out Trump this and Trump that. She never revealed who she is or what she believes, and that is the playbook that she has sang from this election season, and there is every reason to believe that she will revert back to her radical positions, just like Obama ran almost as a moderate, but then reverted to extreme progressive. Joe Biden did the same thing, but was even more to the left of Obama. And Harris comes into this election even further to the left than both of them, already having been identified as the most leftist senator in the U.S. Congress, despite the fact that now she is taking positions that sound very conservative, very Republican. But she will revert back to where she has always been. Mark my words. This is now from this article again. The road to ruin, historical lessons ignored. The historical record is clear. Nations that have embraced such ideologies have descended into socialist regimes marked by widespread poverty, suppression of dissent, and the rise of totalitarian regimes. Harris's promotion of these ideas is not merely misguided, it poses a direct threat to the American way of life and the principles of freedom and opportunity that have made the United States a beacon of hope and prosperity for generations. Harris's advocacy for equalizing outcomes rather than opportunities is a thinly veiled push for neo-Marxist ideology. This destructive philosophy has invariably led to societal collapse, economic ruin, and authoritarian oppression wherever it has been implemented. This approach raises serious concerns about potential government overreach and the erosion of individual merit and responsibility in favor of centrally managed, falsely conceived notions of fairness. I am going to just read a couple of more of these paragraphs in this long essay. The far-left agenda includes several proposals that could be seen as constitutionally dubious, and I'll go through them. Student loan forgiveness, fracking bans, eliminating minority party rights to filibuster, promoting electric vehicles and eliminating combustion engines, expanding the Supreme Court and packing it with liberals, abolishing the Electoral College to allow liberal states like California, New York, and Illinois to dominate, granting statehood to D.C. and Puerto Rico, therefore likely gaining 4 more Democratic senators and several Democratic U.S. House members, push for the welfare state with basic universal income, gun control, repealing the Second Amendment, socialized medicine, Medicare for all, more climate change regulations, continued lax immigration policy to change the culture and the demographics, stricter restrictions on social media and free speech, and finally, more regulations and nationalization of industry and commerce. Implementing these proposals through executive action rather than proper legislative channels could significantly depart from constitutional norms and dramatically reshape American society. This is basically dictatorial. The team progressive Democrats supporting these proposals include Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Cori Bush, Jamal Bowman, Pramila Jayapal, Ro Khanna, Ed Markey, Chuck Schumer, and Hakeem Jeffries. These politicians advocate for communist and socialist policies. This is a problem. I'm not going to read the rest of this because it goes on and on. But this is really where we are in our decision between Trump and Harris, because Harris represents the Trojan horse for Marxism. And if people are not appreciating this, they're asleep at the wheel and they're not doing their research and not paying attention. This list of people that I have just run through that support this agenda are a rogues gallery of people who hate the U.S. and hate, by the way, Israel. And Kamala Harris has signed on to this band of brothers and sisters and going to take us down the way of Venezuela or other banana republics if we don't stop her. So you really need to think about this in early voting, absentee voting, or at the ballot box in less than 3 weeks on election day. Let's go back to healthcare for the last 30 minutes of my shows on America Web Radio. There can be fixes to healthcare, which can be bipartisan, but it will never happen in a Democrat administration who wants complete control over you and your healthcare decisions. John Goodman was my guest a few weeks ago and pointed out the reforms that are needed which are not conservative nor liberal. They're not Democrat nor Republican. They are common sense reforms. We need to make government entitlements into cash payments to an HSA with a card like an EBT card for groceries. Many doctors don't take Medicaid because the payments are so low and because Medicaid rejects more claims than Medicare or commercial insurance. And many top medical centers won't even see Medicaid patients. And the same goes for urgent care centers. So as a result, the Medicaid patients use emergency rooms for their primary care. And in fact, new enrollees in the expanded Medicaid program are using emergency rooms 40% more frequently than others. And now direct pay, giving patients a say into how their money is spent and giving them skin in the game, would make them into better consumers and open up more possibilities for improved health care for the patients and reduce costs to the system. Another common sense reform, direct primary care, putting money into accounts where people can, employers can pay for direct primary care and allow them to deduct it as a tax benefit to the business. Let employees choose their own healthcare plans, which is portable. This was possible before Obamacare if a plan offered was, quote, not Obamacare compliant. Have more insurance options, like the short-term policies that Joe Biden threw out, which Donald Trump had strengthened. Trump did this, and demand increased for these short-term policies from 600,000 to greater than 3 million. This is important for people who are between jobs or who don't have insurance that is being provided by their employer. Medicare Advantage is the only insurance that incentivizes insurers to cover sick care. There are chronic disease coverages that pays insurance more, which are risk adjusted, and this requires underwriting, which was eliminated by Obamacare because everybody needed to qualify. So the insurance was more expensive because there was no underwriting, and as a result, somebody who is a healthy 60-year-old who doesn't need maternity benefits or doesn't need pediatric coverage or any other things that wouldn't apply to them has to pay for it because there's no underwriting. They can't make policies. Insurers can't write policies that would be patient-specific any longer. We need to unleash healthcare savings accounts and separate them from any deductible requirements or any insurance product. Let people use their HSAs for anything health-related. And we need to establish tax fairness because people right now at the same income level can be getting radically different tax subsidies depending on where they get their health insurance from. The subsidies should be eliminated and replaced by refundable tax credits, and this will make it a more even playing field. For this election, for most people regarding health care, health care has dropped to the bottom, despite the fact that 25 to 50% of Americans report problems paying their medical bills. The number will be greater depending on how sick patients are. The Kaiser Family Foundation conducted a study and found Medicare solvency, value, state Medicaid spending, employer premiums, and national health spending are so far down on the list this year, and that's why people are not paying attention. people are not filling their prescriptions and they're skipping doctor visits and other forms of care to decrease their out-of-pocket spending because it's gotten so far out of whack. And Obamacare has actually made this worse because out-of-pocket exposure is higher than ever before. It can be as high as $9,400 for an individual. The government's rules favor those that need the least care. Biden undercut the short-term insurance plans, as I said, leaving people with no choice except Obamacare. The best opportunity to lower health care costs right away is outlawed by Democrats. But Democrats are focusing on other things to convince the public that they are the best choice for health care. So you hear Kamala Harris going out railing against pharmacy benefit management companies, promising to come after them. They claim that they've lowered prescription drug prices, mostly citing insulin, which actually occurred by Trump but didn't get implemented until the Biden administration. But they're also claiming that the Inflation Reduction Act lets Medicare set prices for 10 of the costliest drugs. And what this really is a smokescreen because the, I'll get into that in a second, but they're also, the Democrats and Kamala are pushing the war on hospital mergers, saying that this is a reason why healthcare costs have skyrocketed. And what's ironic, what's rich about this is that Obamacare supercharged this to happen because they outlawed physician ownership of surgery centers and certificate of need laws, which we won't talk about today. We've talked about that on this show many, many times, prevents there from being hospital-owned doctor-owned facilities, which would significantly reduce healthcare costs because of competition. But 34 states currently have certificate of need laws that prevent that. Let's go back to drug pricing, though, and the rhetoric that the Inflation Reduction Act has reduced costs. This is actually a lot of bull. And the reason is because seniors who get their drugs on Medicare Part D are actually paying increased premiums, as well as higher prices at the pharmacy. And this is because of the Inflation Reduction Act. What has happened is, yes, they've lowered the cost of drugs, but guess what? Somebody is picking those costs up. The pharmacy, the pharmaceutical companies are not. Others are paying for this along the way. There's no free lunch. And these costs are ultimately passed along to patients in the way of increased premiums. So for seniors, what they are seeing is a 20% increase in their out-of-pocket costs for premiums and cost for Medicare Part D. So instead of lowering costs, the Inflation Reduction Act is a master plan of cost shifting. So the Democrats are dishonest with seniors. You see the commercials on TV. They are getting seniors to give testimonials how Trump wants to take away their Medicare or their Social Security, when in fact it's the Democrats who are doing just who are doing damage to the system with their policies that are going to ultimately result in less benefits, higher costs to the seniors, and reduced benefits on Social Security. The Biden administration promised to hold the line against Medicare spending cuts and to cut prescription drug costs. And to do this, the burden is shifted to the Part D insurers. And the seniors are getting hosed here, and they are not being the Democrats are completely dishonest with them. Seniors don't realize it, but their costs at the pharmacy are based on nominal pricing, while the drug plan that they are that's part of their Medicare Advantage in many cases gets undisclosed rebates from the drug manufacturer. Now, a Trump executive order would have required the pharmacists to pass these discounts along to the patients, but the Inflation Reduction Act delayed this until 2032. As a result, Medicare patients continue to be overcharged at the pharmacy for almost every drug that they purchase. Medicare Advantage provides some protection, but the trade-off for savings is more restrictions on the panel of doctors and hospitals that they can select. It's a closed HMO. And also, inflation has resulted in cutting of government subsidies to the Medicare Advantage plans. And again, these costs are passed along to seniors one way or the other. Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, cut more than $300 billion in subsidies for Part D insurance over the past 10 years. Further, the federal government has been paying 80% of the cost of catastrophic prescription drug insurance. This now drops to 20% under IRA. And the bulk of the cost is shifted to private insurance plans, which will be passing this along to customers as higher premiums. Again, cost shifting to subsidize the insurance under Obamacare. And it's punishing everyone who has income, better insurance. They want everybody to have equalized care. It's bringing everybody down instead of rising all boats up. What's happening is that this money, this $300 billion that has been taken away from Medicare, has been shifted. It's been shifted to green energy companies and buyers of electric vehicles. So the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, is a reverse Robin Hood bill, according to John Goodman. It takes from the poor and the middle class and gives it to the rich, the people who run the green energy companies and the people who can afford electric vehicles. It's a piggy bank for the government to finance non-health related projects that often benefit the wealthy. So let's take a look now what else could possibly go wrong in a Kamala Harris presidency. We don't hear very much about transgender except for the Trump articles that talking about giving gender-affirming surgery to convicts in prison or illegal aliens. And that there's some truth to that, but what's far worse and far more troubling is gender-affirming surgery and treatments to minors, which in my opinion, as you know, I've stated this over and over again, is child abuse. And anybody who is abetting that should be arrested for child abuse. Well, what's happening is that the FBI now, the Biden-Harris FBI, is targeting child trans treatment whistleblowers. And don't expect any sympathy from Tim Walz, who signed into law a bill making Minnesota a sanctuary state for trans minors, people who feel that they need gender-affirming care, but who may not have parents that would allow that to happen. They can get whisked away from their parents out of their state by a teacher or by a sympathetic person who is a trans sympathizer, and bring them to Minnesota to get that care without parent consent. So in June, the Department of Justice indicted Dr. Ethan Haim on 4 felony charges for exposing child transgender surgeries and hormone treatment of minors at Texas Children's Hospital. Haim is a pediatric surgeon in Texas, and he anonymously leaked to a newspaper documents showing that Texas Children's Hospital secretly continued its child transgender treatment program after announcing in 2022 that it was shutting it down. And Ken Paxton, the Texas Attorney General, called such treatments child abuse, rightfully so. But Texas Children's continued the program despite this. And according to Haim, Texas Children's was manipulating, mutilating, and sterilizing young children. And they talked about this openly. And Dr. Haim said it was his responsibility to do something. The Department of Justice alleges that Haim violated HIPAA when he exposed Texas Children's secret program. He faces up to 10 years in prison. All information that he provided was redacted, so there was no HIPAA violation. And HIPAA violations, by the way, are misdemeanors and not prosecuted, absent some additional more significant crime. One day after the leaked information, Texas passed a law banning gender interventions in children. These were already illegal when Haim blew the whistle on Texas Children's. But after he blew the whistle, the Department of Justice threatened his wife's career. She'd been hired as an assistant U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Texas and began to pursue and the Department of Justice was using lawfare against her. In June, the federal agents visited the home of another Texas Children's whistleblower, a nurse, who accused Texas Children's of illegally billing Medicaid for transgender procedures, some of which she says she participated in, even telling a child how to inject hormones before she had a change of heart and didn't want to do it anymore. Haim and his wife had spent their entire life savings on legal fees before going public with the story, and people have raised close to $1 million to help them cover their legal costs. But this is the ideology of a Marxist regime over health care, over the benefit of children. It gets worse what will happen under Kamala Harris, what you can expect. Here's another tidbit to shed light on Democratic policies and how they are anti-patient. California is blocking patients from getting health care out of state via telemedicine, which is something that really took off during the pandemic and is a tremendous improvement over where we were before the pandemic. This is one of the positives to come out of the pandemic, expanded use of telemedicine. But California is requiring that only California licensed physicians should be able to conduct telemedicine visits on California residents. Doctors who violate this mandate by consulting with out-of-state patients in need of care face criminal charges and stiff fines that can jeopardize their medical careers. Now, this is being challenged as unconstitutional, but it harms patients who may not be able to find quality care needed by doctors in the state. Why is this the case? Powerful lobbies, government control. We don't really understand this, but it's a taste of what Democrat priorities are regarding health care and their regard for patients and patient care. Suppose that you had a very rare cancer and you were in California, and there were only a couple of medical centers in the country that had experts on your rare cancer, maybe Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York or MD Anderson in Houston. California law would ban doctors from being able to do these telemedicine visits. How wrong is this? This is the Democrat positions. People need to get this through their heads. I've got 10 minutes before my show's over. I've said all that I want to say about the upcoming election, but I really pray that people will make the right decision, because making Kamala Harris president would really send us down a road from which there is no return. And I truly believe that with every fiber of my being. So I'm praying that people make this right decision. This is my last book review, apparently, and I really wanted to recommend the latest Marty McCary book. He's written two books previously that are excellent, Unaccountable, and then The Price We Pay, both of which I highly recommend. But this new book, entitled Blind Spots, I believe is his best effort yet. And it's unbelievably startling. I learned stuff from this book. And the premise of his book is that many of the decisions that we are confronted with, that the medical establishment is making, is based on opinions or the loudest voice in the room, not evidence-based medicine, but what the powerful medical associations or the very prominent doctors in the field believe is the case. They may cite studies that are not that have results that achieve absolutely no significant statistical significance, no difference between the group that they're studying with the problem and a control group, but nonetheless, if they think that there might be a trend or their belief is, well, there just weren't enough patients to show that there's a difference, they'll make a conclusion that's totally erroneous, and public and medical policymakers will go ahead and act on those opinions, while there will be doctors, perhaps, who then do studies who refute the dogma, and they are marginalized, and they are not taken seriously, and they can't get their papers published. They can't get their studies on a meeting agenda to present them. And it's really so ubiquitous. It's out there, and nobody really knows this. The chapters in his book are just incredibly well-written, well-researched, and explain that some of the things that have happened were not based on any data, but opinions. One chapter on peanut allergy, how the experts created this epidemic by depriving babies of exposure to substances which are called antigens that may allow the body to make antibodies so that they would not be allergic when they're exposed to it. Hormone replacement therapy. There were people who acted on a study that they claimed showed that women who received hormone replacement therapy had a higher rate of breast cancer than those who didn't. It was nonsense. It's not real. And despite that, several generations of women did not receive hormone replacement therapy, which actually could have been therapeutic for them and saved them so many other medical problems like osteoporosis or heart disease, just to name a couple. Antibiotics. People were saying there's no downside to it. Well, that's not true. There's a tremendous downside to the use of antibiotics without any specific indications. And what has happened is that two things: we've created superbugs because of that, and we've wiped out people's microbiome, the good bacteria in people's systems that prevent them from getting other diseases. What else have we been misled about? Well, we have been misled about how we are supposed to treat babies after they're born, and taking the baby away from the mother, not allowing the mother to have exposure to the baby for several days, cutting the umbilical cord immediately, not allowing the mom to breastfeed for a while, giving antibiotics routinely to premature babies. All of these things have been debunked since they were put into place, but for generations they were in play. And the list is a long list of chapters, but every one is an example about how the medical establishment has gotten it wrong because they're not basing decisions on medical evidence, but on opinion and the loudest voices in the room. So I highly recommend that you go out and buy Blind Spots by Marty McCarry. Well, this is my farewell in America's Web Radio. It's been a great run. It's been over 10 years, and I have enjoyed coming in here every other week and being able to share my thoughts with you. I appreciate your indulgence in allowing me to do this. It's been one of the great honors of my life, and I'm going to miss this very much. And we're going to miss David Moxley, who allowed us to be able to be in this position and gave us a forum, gave doctors a forum to be able to share the things that doctors are talking about in doctors' lounges all across the country amongst themselves. So we'll see if we can find a way for our America Web Radio listeners to be able to find our new podcasts once we launch them. So please be on the lookout for them. So this is Dr. Hal Schurz, thanking you and signing off from the doctor's lounge.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.